This is a special program on Multicultural 1600 AM, so please stay tuned.
California, California, luôn gấu là rong gấu, luôn đấu là rong đầu.
Nhà Jean Toilet Set Thu, Jean Chien, and Torkong, the Gouda Show, Multicultural, 1600 AM. This is the Hmong American Hour. Thank you for joining me. And today I have two special guests with me. One is Nick and one is Zia. And they're with Goosehead Insurance. So, guys, say hi to everybody.
Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in. And Zia, thank you so much for having us.
Nhà Jean, the Gouda Show.
All right. We'll be speaking Hmong in English off and on. So if Nick, you feel like speaking Hmong, go for it too, okay?
All right.
So why don't you guys share a little bit of your story, how you guys met and how it drove you guys all the way to insurance.
Sure. So as far as how we met, Zhi and I have actually known each other since fourth grade, I believe.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And Zhi will get a little bit into her path and kind of how she got to be in Fresno. I was born and raised here, so we met at Manchester Elementary in fourth grade. We went to elementary school, high school, and college together, and then we actually started dating pretty much right when we graduated from college, and that was almost 13 years ago.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, that's how the two of us got to be together. As far as how we got to be in business together, Najia has always been a little bit of an entrepreneur. She can get into that, obviously, a little bit more. I don't want to speak on her behalf. For me, I was very much tied to corporate America. I was a software consultant, so very white collar, you know, 9-to-5 kind of thing. And I really wanted, Fresno is my home and always has been. And so I really wanted to set down some roots here. And so I think a lot of folks will agree one of the best ways to do that, aside from just getting involved in nonprofits and some things in your community, is to actually open up a business. And so that's kind of how opening a business came about for me. And then I can get into a little bit more how insurance was the choice for us. But I think Zhi has a much more interesting story about how that all came about.
So how I got into insurance is if you get down to it, it wasn't by choice, I guess you could say. We understood that in order to be a successful business in the Central Valley, if you speak Hmong or Spanish, you have an edge, right? But just because of the diversity of the Central Valley. And so before I started this insurance business with Nick, I was a full-time artist. I graduated from Fresno State with my degrees in graphic design and molecular and cellular biology, but right out of college, I actually worked as a production artist for the Fresno Bee. So I was there for a couple years, and it's always been my dream to be a full-time artist. And so I was doing that for a couple years before we started this insurance journey. But I find that my skills, just be my own business owner, has actually helped me to help Nick with the insurance. So he does a lot of the nitty-gritty day-to-day quoting and everything. I help the best I can to help generate leads by using like business and marketing skills that I have obtained over the years. And then in between all that, I fit in teaching part-time at Fresno State. So I'm just kind of have a diverse set of skill sets that I try to apply as much as I can to the business.
Oh, wow. Doing quite a few things there.
Yes.
So how's teaching for you at Fresno State?
It is actually really fulfilling, because if you were to ask me if I had even considered teaching as part of my career path, I would have never said yes, just because I just don't feel like I would be qualified, right? But I had a turning point when I met one of my clients at one of my events, and he said, "The fact that I'm asking you to teach me means I see that you have qualifications that I don't have and that you have value to teach." And so that kind of made me think, okay, you know, maybe I am all the stuff that I do for, I take for granted when I draw, right? I don't think, I just create. But in my head, I'm looking at a composition, I'm looking at design, I'm looking at layout, all these elements, I just, it's second nature. But that stuff, when you actually put it on paper, it's teachable materials. So, but the funny thing is that at State, I don't teach art. I actually teach artists how to be business owners.
That's awesome. That's awesome. You know, sometimes I always tell people, you know, you can't wait until you feel that you're at the right position to teach people or help people. Maybe some people are already, they just don't think it in their head, and you have to get by, past that. You have to be able to, hey, you know, if I do have some knowledge and some skills that I could share with people, I should do it, because guess what? The thing that I learned about that is that it actually helps you develop that your skills and take you to the next level with that interaction between people learning from you and you actually learning how to work with people.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, and I'm sure I'm not the first person to say this, but I think one of the best ways to learn how to do something is to try to teach it to somebody else, because all of a sudden you really have to take a step back and evaluate your own skill set, and people are going to ask questions that you would not have come up with on your own, and now you either have to fake an answer or actually figure it out. So
it's kind of like a salesperson, right?
Right.
If you want to be good at selling whatever you're selling, you actually have to go out and sell.
Right.
Because if you don't sell, you're not going to encounter those questions. And then, you know, guess what? Next time you get encounter that question again, it's a breeze. You can answer that question.
Absolutely.
But if you never encounter it, you'll be like, oh man, how am I going to answer this?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I've gotten lucky. I've had some kind of strange situations, insurance-wise, that have popped up. And I never thought that I would have somebody ask me for, you know, this particular type of coverage in this scenario. You know, if it's something a little bit strange, like a manufactured home in a high fire risk area, and then they do some like hobby farming as well, right? So you kind of start checking off the boxes on, okay, this is kind of a weird situation. And I'll be danged if it doesn't come up again a week later. And you look like a genius because I just happen to have that answer right off. And the only reason I do is because somebody asked me and stumped me, you know, 3 or 4 days before that, and I had to do some research. So,
okay, cool, cool. Hey, Zia, I want to ask you a question before we get into more about what you guys do and stuff from there. I always like to share, use this opportunity to share how we got to the U.S. in a little bit. So can you share that, a little bit of your story with everyone?
Yeah, so I always forget myself, but I am an immigrant. I was not born in the U.S. I was born in, at the time, a small town in Laos called Luang Prabang. So, and when I was little, at the end of the Vietnam War, my family was forced to flee our homes. We crossed the Mekong River, and we were lucky, one of the lucky families to be able to survive that river crossing, and settled in the refugee camps in Thailand. So I believe we probably stayed at Bon Vinai, which no longer exists because they closed it down.
Yes.
And sent people back to homes that are not there anymore. And so we were there for a couple of years before my aunt's family was able to sponsor us to the U.S. So I always forget that I am not first generation. I am an immigrant with my parents, and that I just worked very hard to make sure that even at a young age, it was instilled in me that in order to be successful, you just have to assimilate and acclimate and learn. And that education was key.
Yeah, it's very true. I believe that coming, having the history of struggle that you have to go through actually teaches you a lot and also pushes you to be the better person, you know?
Yeah, and usually the older I get, the more I can appreciate how hard it is for parents to uproot their family and just trust in the fact that whatever comes next is better than where you are right now, that you have no choice, because I can only imagine how scary it is to gather all your kids and go across the world to a land you never heard of, to a culture that you don't know anything about, in a language where you do not speak of. If I were to try to put myself in my parents' shoes, I can't even imagine if I could do what they did. And then, of course, to raise a family of 13 with 10 of us having graduated from college with degrees and the other three still in college, that's an amazing feat for immigrant parents who don't speak the language, who started with absolutely nothing. I think that's an amazing feat.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I totally agree. You know, I believe that our parents, you know, they went through the hardest thing. Like you said, you don't speak the English. You don't know anything about where you're going to go. And you don't know what to expect. But they did it, and they were able to actually not raise one or two kids, okay? Nowadays, we have, what, one or two kids, the most probably four or five. Back then, most families have a minimum of seven to 10 kids. I mean, I came from a 10-kid family, and it was great, too, you know, by having a lot of brothers and sisters. It teaches a lot. Sometimes you have to fend for yourself, and you learn from there. But, you know, funny thing is that living here, sometimes within your own family, you say, hey, yeah, should we move to this state or should we move to this state? You're like, oh, no, I'm scared. But, you know, our parents move all the way from another country to here. And, yeah, that was even more scary than what we are talking about, trying to move to a different state, you know.
Yeah, no, Nick and I were talking recently, you know, just about education and just families in the Central Valley and homeownership, right? With regards to, especially the Hmong community, people that own homes is usually multi-generational, right? Where you Yes. have your grandparents, you have your parents, and then you have the kids, and then the grandkids. So in any household, especially with the more traditional families, that's what happens. And so it just actually got me thinking back to my parents and back to our journey and back to when we got here. You see students or you see kids that get help with their homework at home, but you don't remember how you got past that stage because your parents couldn't help you with homework.
That's true. Yes. I was telling my kids, you know, because sometimes you ask them, hey, you need to do your homework. And they're like, why? I'm like, look, when I was growing up, I didn't speak English, came over here, and my grandma and grandpa didn't speak any English. They didn't know how to help me. So I don't know if I did my homework or not. you know?
Right.
And I was telling you have to appreciate that I could actually share my experience with you and try to help you with your schoolwork, even though their schoolwork right now is probably harder than it is with the new system out there. But I think kids nowadays, they have it a lot better than we did. I think that's probably the biggest difference between us and them.
Yeah, I mean, you have kids, so yes, you've gone into schools, you know, more recently, but for me and Nick, we actually just volunteered recently at Kirk Elementary this past Friday, because last week was Read Across America week. And it's a little bit disorienting or unnerving or just unsettling, but in a good way, just to see students, everybody with a laptop doing the work on a tablet or a laptop, whereas, you know, like in our age, I guess, that makes us sound old, that would never have been the case, right? You have to go to a computer lab to use a computer. You're not in regular classroom with a computer at your beck and call so that you can do homework on, so.
Awesome, you know, as business owners or professionals, you know, one of the things that I would say that you need to give back, and I've seen you guys work with a lot of different nonprofit organization. What's the drive there for you guys?
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, it's a little bit different, I think, than it is for Gia, just because our backgrounds are so different. I was born and raised in Fresno, grew up out in the suburbs. So a lot of the things that I take for granted, I really got a new perspective on, both when I actually, I went to high school at Edison, just like Gia did. So a little bit of a demographic change from what I was used to growing up, I think in a good way. But between where I went to high school and then kind of seeing more and more what the Hmong community went through and is still going through, as I spend more and more time with Gia and her family and the Hmong community at large, I think it really gave me a sense of, you know, for the first 30 years of my life, I really focused on myself, and I'd really like to be able to spend the next 30 years of my life making the community around us better, because I think I benefited so much from things around me that I took for granted that it's about time that I gave back, you know, whatever I can, just because the next generation is going to need a lot of the things that folks were kind enough to give to me that I didn't even realize. Yes, so yes. That's really what I'd like to spend the next 30 years on.
Awesome.
What about you?
I give back because the older I get, the more I get to a stage where, I mean, my mom says this to me all the time too. She's like, your material things you can't take with you. So it's better to leave a legacy, leave an impact when you go, because that proves that you were alive. Because, you know, money is nice, but it doesn't buy happiness. It can't buy health. It can't buy family. It can't buy love. So at the end of the day, I'd rather spend my time creating experiences with people, with the community. My biggest gift I can give right now is to be able to give my time to impact change, whether it's helping somebody grow their business, or it's whether it's helping somebody learn a skill set that they didn't know they were capable of, or just sharing my skill sets.
That's awesome. So we're going to be right back after this break, and we'll go into more of what Nick and Zia does, okay?
All
right, right, we are back from break, okay? Nya jao ya nem long pe do sho multicultural 1600 am. Nya ne san nong pe de chi la ne hu to to de tu sa tong chi chi chua blow chua chua e do sun sun. Tu na ya chi chi chua blow chua chua e do sun sun. Ne hu to pe te shi ne san nong chi la to. So the lines are open. If you guys want to call us at 559-499-1600. Give us a call and ask any question you want to ask about what we're talking about here. We would love to hear from you as we're talking. Give us a call and we'll pick up the phone on there. So let's get back to you two.
Sure.
And what made you guys choose a Goosehead? And the word Goosehead, first time I saw it, I'm like, what is Goosehead? Because right. I know that you guys were with a different carrier.
True.
On there. So what brought you guys to Goosehead?
Yeah. So when I initially opened, I was a State Farm agent. I had a State Farm office for about a year. Very solid company. I don't have any complaints. I wanted to, and part of this kind of ties back to my strengthening ties with the Southeastern Asian community, and then the Hmong community specifically. I really got, I think, a firmer understanding over the last year or so of what homeownership means, particularly again in the Hmong community. Gia mentioned it before that a home for a Hmong family is, I think, a little bit different than it is for my culture. I was close with my extended family when I was raised, but they were not ever present like they are in a Hmong family. It was not two or three generations in a single home. I didn't have the agricultural ties that particularly Gia's parents have, but I know that that's not rare in the Hmong community. And so as we got more and more in touch with kind of what that looked like, and I identified that as a demographic that I really wanted to work with, there were just some limitations to the product that I had when I was with a single company that I really felt didn't do a service to the community that we wanted to reach out to. And so for us to do business the way we wanted to with the folks that we wanted to do business with, I needed to make a change where I had more options. And so that's really where Goosehead came in. There are some behind the scenes reasons as far as the actual nuts and bolts of the business piece of it. But for the product offering, I was in a situation where I could offer, 35, 40 different carriers for folks. So if somebody called and said, hey, I have a little bit of an older home that's going to be a little bit of a fixer upper, it's going to be a little bit tricky to insure, I have a carrier for that. If they called and said, hey, we have, a half acre that we do some recreational farming on. It's just hobby farming, but it's very important to our family. We had a carrier for that, whereas I couldn't necessarily do that before. And so I wanted to make sure that really anybody that called or emailed us, regardless of what language they spoke, what the condition of the property looked like, there was a product out there. Now, whether or not the price fit for them, obviously that's always, kind of be a case by case basis, but I didn't want any more situations where somebody called and said, hey, we grow rice on the back 2 acres, and me immediately have to say, sorry, I can't help you. So that was part of the reason we made the switch.
So what about you, Zia?
Yeah, earlier when I said that how I ended up insurance wasn't much of a choice, I think it ended up being more of a calling, because okay. I think that insurance uniquely puts you in a position to educate people, because insurance is a product that you buy kind of peace of mind, right?
Yes.
To prepare for a worst case scenario, basically. You don't ever want to talk to your insurance agent, but when you do, you want to make sure that you're taken care of, basically.
That's
fair. We get a lot of people that like, hey, you know what? We've had people go, I really like you guys. I'm glad my stuff is taken care of. I don't ever want to talk to you guys again. But it's because people are trusting you to put their best interests first. And that's how we do business. I think insurance, again, puts us in a position to where we can educate people on how their coverages work. Because I don't know how many people, if you've talked to people and you go, hey, so who's your home insurance through? A lot of people don't know. Right, especially when they're first-time homebuyers.
Very true, very true.
And so we want to change that. We want to be able to say, hey, we'll touch bases with you every year. We'll call you to see if anything's changed, because sometimes, too, people do renovations on their home. They add stuff. They add solar panels, but they don't think, hey, now my home is more valuable. Maybe I should call my insurance agent and get that adequately changed so that if something happens, that stuff is covered also. So just educating people on the importance of just, you know, like, it's okay to talk to insurance agent. Your insurance agent shouldn't make you feel like you have to add multiple policies or try to sell you more products. They should only, they should be able to be comfortable. Just, you should be, you should be comfortable talking to insurance agent.
Yeah, it's really about making sure you protect everything that you need to protect. And what people don't realize is that insurance on anything, those policy needs maintenance.
Yeah.
You know, if you take a look at it like that, then you would want to call your agent back and say, hey, you know, I have a change in my life.
Yep.
What will this cover, and what can we do? Zia, what can you if you were speaking to some of the, I know that each community, it's a little bit different, mm-hmm. as you deal with, and that's one of the things that you have to understand as business people going out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, reason why you guys switch over, because mm-hmm. with the old carrier, you couldn't really help the community that you want to help out as the way you wanted to help out.
Right.
This gives you more freedom on there. So yeah, as if you were to be speaking with some of the Hmong out there, and you're speaking Hmong, what kind of stuff that you could advise them on when they're looking at getting insurance policy and stuff like that?
To my community, I feel that there is this fine balance of wanting to find somebody that speaks the language so they can explain stuff to you versus kind of like a mistrust of whether or not they will sell you exactly what you're looking for. And so I think that's a challenge when we're working with the community, just because they may have bad experiences. And also just with the Hmong community too, a lot of the older people are used to brand names, right? So like they're used to hearing stuff like Farmers, State Farm, some of the bigger names. When you say you're a broker, they may not necessarily understand what a broker is.
Yes, they don't.
So they won't know exactly that. And if you start talking about the smaller companies, they're definitely not going to understand because they're not used to that. And so there is that brand awareness to overcome. And so that's why Nick and I, even when we switched over to Goosehead, we were very visible. We were at the Hmong New Year. We had a table there. I spoke to a lot of like Hmong potential clients that walked by, just explaining what we were and what we did, and even let them know, hey, we were with State Farm, but now we have a lot more options as Goosehead because we're not limited to one product. So,
yeah, I think for any community, if you could show them that you actually care.
Mm-hmm.
Before you worry about selling that policy, that product or service, they'll actually listen to you. And doing a community work like what you guys are doing is, it's a great way to be out there to show them that you actually care and about the community, and you want to help out the community on there. So, tell us a little bit about the process of when they, because there's a lot of new home buyers out there.
Yep.
They're not aware of it. Like I was telling you guys earlier, when I first bought my house, I didn't even know that I need a policy until we're signing docs and the title company say, where's your coverage? I'm like, I thought the agents got it covered. Yeah. You know, they had to make a quick phone call because the agent didn't tell me, hey, you need to get a policy to cover before we sign doc. I didn't know that. I thought it was maybe after that, I'll go get my own, right?
Right. Yep. Yeah, and like you said, thankfully, I think folks are, and a lot of the real estate agents and the loan officers that we work with and that are prevalent in our community, I think are doing an exceptional job of letting folks know that a lot of the kind of home buying myths that you've grown up with are not necessarily true. I think that really takes root in the Central Valley because we have so many either immigrant or first generation families here that aren't really familiar with, I mean, I think you kind of hear, hey, you need 20% down to buy a house. You know, there's a lot of these things that folks don't realize that home ownership is attainable for them. So I think the very first step is finding a loan officer who can really walk you through and say, hey, either you are already in a good spot to buy a home, let's go find you a real estate agent, let's find you a house, or can say, hey, these are the things that we need to do, but home ownership is not as far out of your grasp as you seem to think it is. What the process looks like after that, obviously after you find your dream home and you make all the numbers work, I always let folks know, as soon as you find an address that you think, hey, this is a solid candidate, you're not 100% sold maybe, or, you know, there's still some things to work out, but, hey, you know, 123 Main Street, I think this could be the house that I'm looking at. If you have somebody in mind for an insurance agent, go ahead and reach out to them right away. It's going to be easier for everybody. The sooner in the process, the better, because at that point, you can factor in some of the things that are going to come up with that insurance quote into your home buying decision. If the quote comes back and you think it's ridiculous, well, now you have time to go and get two or three more.
Yes.
Or now, and if they all come back ridiculous, you can say, okay, well, you know what? Maybe 123 Main Street is not the home of my dreams. Like I really thought it was, but I guess the fact that there was a meth lab in the basement means like, maybe this isn't the best choice for us. Let's go ahead and call an audible and look at a different building. So I always advise, look as early as you can. If you know an agent, great, go ahead and reach out to them. If not, frequently your loan officer is going to know a professional that they trust. You're still not obligated to go with them. And I think one of the common misconceptions is that mortgage offices actually sell homeowners insurance. They do not. I think that can be kind of mixed up because folks, once they get to that stage, especially if they're a first-time home buyer, they are so eager to get into their home and just get all the paperwork and everything done with, because it can be a tough process. Not always, but it can be exhausting. I think they kind of just feel like, hey, anything that the loan officer puts in front of me, that's coming from the loan officer. Let's go ahead and sign it.
that is true, you know.
But yeah, I really recommend folks start in the process as early as possible. It really is not that tricky for a qualified insurance agent to put a proposal together for you for your home. It's really not that tough. Go ahead and reach out to them early. Get that process started so you can see, are there any pitfalls with this property? Is there anything going on here that is not going to work for me financially? Plus, it makes it so much easier for your loan officer when you can come back and say, hey, we're looking at, you know, X number of dollars per month that you need to factor in. I've got the policy all set. Everything's ready to go. You go ahead and do your thing. It's a benefit to everybody. So that's what I recommend the process really looks like.
You know, if you really think about it, it's kind of like when you're buying a car. If you're going to finance it, you're going to need a insurance policy before they let you
right.
they let you take that car, right?
Yep.
So it's about the same thing when you're buying a house on there.
Yeah.
And you're not going to get it until there's insurance covering that property.
Yeah. And one of the things that I always point out to people is obviously there are a lot of pieces to a property policy. You know, there's a lot of different coverages in a homeowner's policy. The bank is really concerned with making sure that if that house burns down, or if like a Wizard of Oz incident happens and that house just disappears and it flies away, they want to make sure that they get money for the house. That's what they're on the line for.
Sure, sure.
Their concerns are not your liability coverages, your personal property coverages. That's not to say that banks don't care, but I mean, they're looking to make sure that their investment is protected. So you need to make sure that your stuff and your investment and your lifestyle is protected. So that's why it's really good to evaluate all of the individual pieces of the policy, not just, hey, that coverage A, this is how much the house is insured for. There are other things that people outside of the lending institution are going to be concerned with.
Awesome. We'll be right back after this break, okay?
Rồng lý có hữu sáng cao trao của lưu California, California, luôn gấu là rong gấu, luôn đâu là rong đâu.
All right, we are back with Nick and Zia. So this time we're going to do it a little bit different. Nick's going to explain this part a little bit in English, and then I'm going to have Zia explain it in Monglish, right?
It's a little bit better than Monglish, but yes, okay. I'll do my best.
All right, so we were talking a little bit about, you know, when you're with a client, and most of the clients don't know what it is, and you're going over a policy.
Sure.
They bought their house for, let's say, $300,000. What is the right amount that you need to make sure you cover? Because like a car, if you did not cover some of the stuff that the new CD tape that you bought and put into the car, guess
right.
what? When something happened to it, it's probably not going to get covered. You probably get the standard tape that was supposed yep. to be in the car, right?
Yeah, and that's an excellent question. And that's one of the questions that first-time home buyers always have, and it comes up a lot. In some of the first-time home buyers workshops that I've done, and you know, some things like that, that's one of the frequently asked questions that you're always going to see. Really, in a nutshell, it's going to depend. So what I always let folks know is what you're looking at with the market value for your home, right? Like what that would actually sell for or what you just purchased it for. There's a ton of factors that play into that that insurance companies aren't really concerned with. One of the big ones is just desirability of the neighborhood. So maybe you're in a place where the property values are a little bit elevated because there's a fantastic school right down the street. There's a brand new strip mall. There's a lot of kind of the amenities that people are really looking for. Like maybe it's within walking distance of a bunch of great stuff. Well, insurance companies don't generally care for that kind of thing, right? We're really looking for, when we insure a building, how much do or does the individual carrier think if that building just burned to the ground tomorrow? How much would they really feel like it would take to restore that home to like new condition, right? So between materials, labor, all those kind of things, what are we looking at there? So I always let people know, frequently in Fresno, just because of the way property values work, you're normally going to be fairly close. I don't see normally a huge discrepancy. You know, if a home is $300,000, some carriers might say, hey, you know, there's a swimming pool in the back that is not going to be covered under your coverage A, the primary dwelling structure. So that obviously played into the market value of the home. You know, you're in Clovis school districts, that's going to increase it a little bit. But I don't normally see like a huge discrepancy there. Frequently, if it's a $300,000 market value home, you know, we might see it somewhere between $250,000 and like $325,000 or $350,000 is kind of that swing that we normally see in Fresno. Obviously, you know, there's going to be some outliers. Where it gets really interesting is if you're in an area like San Jose, for example. You know, you can have an 1,100 square foot home in San Jose, and if it's in a desirable area in San Jose, that might be a $1.2 million purchase for you. Uh-huh. An insurance company looks at it and says, okay, that's still a $350,000 house, just like it would be in Fresno. It's just you paid $1 million for it now.
Yes.
So that is something that comes up all the time, and I always let folks know, hey, the numbers that we're looking at are for shingles, for boards, for nails, and for yes. somebody to swing the hammer. How much does that look like in our area? We're not really factoring in, you know, how much do people want to live in your neighborhood?
It's kind of like how much would it cost for them to just rebuild it to where it is.
Exactly. Replacement cost is what we're looking at, not market value. And frequently those things are fairly close. Sometimes they're not super close, but in our area, normally they're not too far off.
Okay.
Yeah. So I always tell Nick that when I translate stuff, it's never going to be equivalent because he just sometimes when you translate stuff, simpler is better, right?
It is, it is.
So, yo ne yo che ye ne yo che chi na ye yo hong ge ne te ne lu che de jiao chi yo ye hong ge e shi la yo 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 oh guch bao hai lu ti lo so de hong ge ne 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 yo ne lu che zao hong ge e shi la yo insure ne lu che zona de ho e shi la chi lu chi sa zo de dai dai ano chi li chia chi ne luce no je je con da jong den da luce sa tu den da luce sa tu ti yo go luce ku nia che chi li chia to ka ko luce go ta ko luce to ko nyo sina le sa tu den da sina so yo go yo ne yo ne luce ya ya de ne sha de hai de ne yo ne luce ya pe po ci ya pe yo So,
I'm going to assume that I agree with everything that she just said.
You see, the great thing about having a two people work together that speaks two different languages, you could touch two markets, right?
Yeah. Yeah, to ko icho je icho lu mika lo chimo lu mong icho lu mong je ha chimo lu mika je ta yo ji pao nong je nong chi tao na.
Yeah, it's kind of like when I was in a grade school, the teacher asked me, "Hey, what's the word for piano?" I'm like, "Piano?"
Right.
I don't have a word for piano. That's what I use. You know, so sometimes because we don't have that in our country, you don't deal with it, so you haven't come up with a name. I'm pretty sure if we deal with a lot, we could come up with a name of some sort, right?
Yeah, well, how long do a mong ye go about there? It's your deal, tell about the you hello mona. Le Jean Chier, le Jean Chier, tell the yellow watch, you know, you tell you, no, you ta. Le July tall, to Saint Zulo, to Menual, lau hollow ye mahuna, manona. So, joining loud ye yellow about there, you lure, hollow, more to name a.
That
usually means they're more likely to do business with you because now they're more comfortable. You're bridging that gap.
It is very true. Yeah, you know, I always share this story with everybody. When I used to live in Chicago, you know, there's only about probably 10 families, and we live in the suburbs, and the majority of them lives spread across in some downtown. And when I go downtown, and if I'm walking downtown, majority is every other race, and if I notice that there's a Hmong across the street, I could tell that's a Hmong person. That person could tell I'm a Hmong person. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, you see each other, hey, how you doing? You know, it's that commonality right there that you gravitate to each other. So speaking the same language makes it easier, especially you're from the older generation, because they're more comfortable with that. Being in a different, coming from a different community, if you want to go to a different community, sometimes, let's say you don't speak their language, but if you take the time to learn their culture, a few words, it actually opens up door very easily, like, nyoshong, you know, very simple, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, that has been proven time and time again, just not with the Hmong community, but when I deal with people that speak Spanish.
Yes.
So my Spanish is passable. I used to be very fluent in it, but I've let my vocabulary go over the years. But we've had clients call in and they would just say, hey, I only speak Spanish. I can't understand. I just don't have the vocabulary anymore. But if I attempt, then they see that I'm attempting to communicate with them in their language, they actually turn and transition to English and say, hey, let's communicate in English. If it's to the point where I can't say that in English, then we'll go ahead and revert to Spanish. But then that transaction becomes in English, when if I had refused to even help them, we would have lost a client or even a potential client. So showing people that you're willing to do business on their terms, or that you're trying to as best as you can, goes a long way.
Yes, it's very true. You know, first time you introduced me to Nick, I thought he was Spanish.
Hispanic. I thought he was Hispanic, but
that's pretty frequent. Yeah.
Guess, he's Russian, so good thing I didn't say anything in Spanish to him.
You would not be the first.
So guys, let's go in and share a little bit more of some of the stuff that you guys deal with and things that you guys could share with people that don't know a lot about the insurance policy and what they need to look for.
Sure. So as far as what we deal with, I always hesitate to say everything because then somebody's going to come up with some oddball thing that I can't control. But by and large, homeowners insurance, auto insurance, I have really yet to find a situation that I couldn't put something together for somebody. We also do umbrella insurance, which for folks that are unfamiliar with that, that is basically a policy that, hence the umbrella piece, is going to kind of sit on top of your other policies and provide excess liability coverage. So basically, if you, and I think most folks do in this day and age, if you need more liability coverage than you have on your standard homeowners or auto insurance policy, then an umbrella policy is generally a pretty good solution for that. We also do, most people call them toys, but things like boats, trailers, RVs, you know, motorcycles, those kind of things. We also do business insurance as well. On the business insurance side, I tend to do fairly vanilla things. If somebody calls me with, you know, a fireworks factory, that's probably not going to be up my alley. I tend to do, because there are folks that I feel can do a better job with that because they really Yes. specialize in that. And so I'm completely okay with handing that off to somebody that I think can do a better job for that particular client. If it's something, you know, fairly vanilla, like, hey, we've got, you know, a small restaurant that serves alcohol, that's fine. I'm comfortable with that. If it's something way out there, that's very true.
If your agent can't handle it, they should not try to write it for you. Yep. They should pass it on to somebody that can actually handle those type of coverage. Yep. And that's when you know that that's a good agent. And they're just not trying to earn a buck off of you, because later on down the road, who ends up getting hurt?
Right.
You. You end up getting hurt.
Yeah, there are, you know, some things like I can do agricultural insurance. For the most part, I tend to pass that off unless it's a client where it's a very simplified risk and they really, really just want to work with me. Then I have no problem putting in the research and getting to a place where I feel comfortable with it. But frequently I'll just say, hey, there are folks that have made an entire career out of that. They're going to know the ins and outs a little bit better than I do. Let's go ahead and put you with them. Gia has a little bit.
So one day bay sauna go the Nick hi the bay more ishla jetia ishla che ishla nang ishla a yeah so you know ishla your name and it or la lua so bat on this she the here bay a bay halu ye bay batch don't it ye bin tien ning ba ne na do ko bay bay bao the ye tau you sa yun tien ning ba you ye yo tu ning you nong the chi ba tau you ye right? So pay more pay halu ye pay pass to ne pay len tian ning pa to ne da shi da shi no ye pay pay len wa echelon da wa echelon again pay len more echelon da j you ne so j le ne yo j pa to di shi che ne ne cha che tao ning lo pa to di shi pay len Bash down it and you need your con to a demon lady shina. So, Oshila not your name, she's ha and Dalzona. Does she pay more than not this year?
Okay.
Well said.
All right. Thank you guys for coming in and joining me today and sharing your knowledge with everybody. We are wrapping up right now. So, I look forward to seeing you guys again at Multicultural 1600 AM.
Thanks so much for having us here.
Yeah, thank you.
You guys are welcome. California, California, luôn gấu là rong gấu, luôn đấu là rong đầu. Chỉ tiếc là mùa trống, tôi chẳng dễ là mùa đầu. Tiếc gì mùa lại mùa phong, mùa sẽ tự nhiên trong cơn gấu. California, California, no chill.
lo xian ya no chu lo xia xong you want to be sang phua phu ta i chong mo lo wan dao ye xi mua cho xiang khao da no da hao chung khang gao California, California, mong thiệt thua mong trên mùa, chiều xin đau ua ba chúa ta bỏ giặc giữ trong để công thể mong nhà vua thao lo.
This was a special program on Multicultural 1600 AM.